Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Eric orders Sheila out on The Bold and the Beautiful. Victoria has some funky face cream on The Young and the Restless. Dammy hunts for Will on Days of Our Lives. And will the real Dries and Morgan please stand up? Please stand up on General Hospital. Stay tuned. Giddens, welcome.
I just need you to stop with the hip-hop.
Don't do that no more.
Well,
don't
Jason
do that.
Morgan, please stand up.
No! Eminem said, I'm good.
I bind that in the name of Soap Jesus.
Well, there were a lot of things that Soap Jesus was involved in this week. Jillian Bo, welcome.
How do?
Let's dive into it all. There's so much to discuss. Mal Young is writing premiered at The Young and the Restless. Sammy is fantastic on Days. And Steve Burton is here to tell us all that he is back, baby. But before we get to those three, let's talk about a little bit of B&B, because that's the show that I'm seeing the most discontent with on Twitter. Jamie, what are your thoughts about it?
You know, I don't have any major discontent with B&B. I've come to accept B&B for what it is. You know, I've had an issue of late with being repetitive with what I say or what I talk about on this podcast. So, look, do I want B&B to take a page from shows like Younger or Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce that are really, you know, up or more appropriate, the bold type on Freeform that really pay attention to what's going on in the very juicy world of fashion? Sure. But am I going to get that? Probably not. So I am okay with whatever B&B is going to be. I mean, I have Summer of Sheila started off, well, you know, now we're in the fall of Sheila. Heck, it's 40 degrees here in Atlanta, so you can't call it summer anymore. So Sheila's return was the surprise of the summer. It's been a big letdown. Some of these shenanigans, I didn't want her coming back as absurd as she had been on both Bold and Y&R near the end of her previous runs, you know, running militia groups and taking Phyllis's face and having, you know, basically spawning a litter of children, you know, between two shows. I didn't want that much ridiculousness, but I did want the type of Jeopardy from Sheila that made you tune in every day gasping, like, you know, when is her evil secret going to be revealed? And I'm not getting any of that. Her plots, her machinations are so pedestrian and, you know, just a waste, in my opinion, of having someone of Kimberlyn Brown's caliber back on the show. I mean, hiring a swarthy gentleman to seduce her rival, that's not a Sheila Carter stunt. That's Blake Thorpe would do something like that. That's not worthy of one of daytime's greatest supervillains. These plots are just very silly. And, you know, the whole crucible of every woman now wanting this, you know, portrait on the Forrester mantle place or whatever. First of all, that's a really new concept. I mean, the whole portrait, not, I mean, that, what is it, like 5 years old? So it's just like Brad is so gimmicky, and that can annoy me, but I've accepted it. I'm not, I know that some Bold, you know, loyalists feel that, you know, this has been a really bad season. I know Matt Hanvey, who's like the Bold and the Beautiful super fan, and I really love him. He makes the funniest gifts.
Yes, he's amazing.
Yeah, well, he posted that he's taking a break from Twitter just because, you know, he's been going really hard against the show. But, and I've been there. Lord knows, I basically live in that space in a lot of ways with daytime. But it's all subjective, because I'm looking at his tweets and I go, Bold annoys me at times, but I haven't felt like this was the worst season ever when I see those kind of, you know, claims. I'm enjoying a lot of things too. I mean, Katie, Jillian Bo called it first. She said Katie and Wyatt would be hot. I had all sorts of reservations. I thought it would be grody. But I'm enjoying that. I think that's fun and sexy. I think Quinn busting in there on them and, you know, driving home the grossness of it was funny with Katie and Wyatt going, hey, over and over. But yeah, the Summer of Sheila has been weak for me. I've long had issues with the way Brad writes Brooke Logan. I mean, Brooke pretty much is in her 50s, and she just exists to go back and forth between men. She's not the woman that I fell in love with on this show, who had career goals and aspirations, and who wanted Forrester Creations to be her legacy for her children, which was diametrically opposed to Stephanie wanting it to be her legacy for her children. She's none of that anymore. She's a vapid airhead who goes back and forth between two men because of her annoying, nerdy teenage son or because of what one of either men does that given day that ticks her off. I mean, her divorce lawyer must be like cha-ching billable hours. So anyway, last week, I saw in the comments that someone ranted about how I went on so long until someone else talked. So go to Jillian.
Jillian, how are you feeling about The Bold and the Beautiful? Are you discontented? Are you happy with it? Where do you stand?
You know, I was loving B&B up until this past week. I was like, y'all got me out here looking crazy in these streets. Damn it. I was not amused. Hey, Jordan Hudson, as he would say. Because I was like, what happened to the show that was just giving me good soap tea? And then it just became when Sheila was just all, my portrait over the mantle. I'm like, nobody really cared about that when I was growing up. No one gave a damn if they had a portrait over the mantle. That was just crazy. And I thought it would be the clash of the Titans with batshit crazy versus the OG Sheila coming in there and being like, look, girl, you a carbon copy of me. I'm gonna come up in here and stun on you hoes trying to be crazy like me. And it was just really, I thought Sheila, I'm like, maybe Jail tamed her because, well, I thought Jail didn't, because when she came in Katie house and was like, you put that fire poker down, I thought, okay, old Sheila is coming back, but she's maybe Jail tamed her because the hijinks and the capers that she's going through, she would not do any of this at all. And I'm kind of let down. I'm kind of not, it just lost its appeal for me. So I'm like, I'm good. Maybe Brad will go back. Maybe Brad is cooling off and going back to the drawing board with that. I'm just not amused by that. By the shenanigans.
It will be interesting. I've already had requests on Twitter about the year-end podcast. It's going to be very interesting to see which shows end up at the top and or as the best and worst shows this year.
Well, beyond that, back to Bold for just a second. You know, my fear is Brad likes shiny new toys. We always make that joke about Dina Higley, but he's the same way in a lot of regards. And now that he has Ingo, you know, he'll write for Ingo for 6 months at the detriment to, you know, everything else. He'll get, you know, oh, I'm bored with Sheila, so now I'm going to, you know, spend time setting up New Thorn. And, you know, then he'll get bored with that. Then he'll, you know, I mean, I just wish he would actually sit down and write out some character arcs for these core characters. You know, where they are, what do they want? What do they want? What does Brooke Logan want out of life? What does Ridge want out of life? You know, Forrester is not really a driving factor anymore. That, you know, for years we knew that Rick wanted Forrester because he felt like, I am Eric Forrester's biological child, and my mother made this company into something greater than it was, and I want my place at the table. He wants nothing now. He wants to talk to Brooke in her kitchen about her love life. Ridge wants to date Brooke again because their stupid son wants them to be together. What are their stakes? What, you know, Sheila wants to be back with Eric so that, you know, it seems like the only reason she wants to be back with him is so that she can have, you know, a county fair portrait hanging above the mantelpiece.
And to be a part of that family. She said also, and to be a part of that family.
Their goals are so pedestrian, and you know, their wants and desires are so pedestrian, and it's just really boring and lazy storytelling. And Brad's better than this. I mean, this is a good writer, and you know, it's just schlocky. It's schlocky, and you know, again, I don't think it's the worst it's ever been, because I remember Ridge trying to mack on Bridget, but you know, it's just hit or miss.
Jillian, what did you think of Mal Young's debut on The Young and the Restless?
I mean, I'm gonna give it a while. He moving like faster than the speed of the speed of a bullet. I'll tell you that. I'm like, okay, Mal. I mean, okay. I'm just, everybody is praising it like Jesus came back and just like healed everybody, and I'm just like, okay. And I wasn't like blown away, but I'm not also going to shit on it also. You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
I'm sorry, Mal, but you know, everybody's going to be like, he's been there longer than that. Sorry, bro. You get the month too for me to see what the swift changes are. He's moving fast. I'll just say that he's moving fast.
I did enjoy Sharon and Lauren's little face-off and almost cat fight. That was a little bit fun, and I did know that the pacing picked up a little. The music seems to be slightly different. There's some other elements to it, but I agree. I'm giving him time. I didn't think it was all that impressive for, like, first episodes. Jamie, what did you think?
So I had a bit of a mini Twitter meltdown, which I tend to do about The Young and the Restless. And
well,
you know,
you only melt down about things you love, which is why I almost never have a meltdown about Bold and the Beautiful.
Well, here's my issue. And like Jillian, I mean, we've always tried to give shows a month. And boy, I said I was giving him a month. And then 2 days in, I had a meltdown. And my meltdown was deja vu related, because I just really wish that CBS Daytime and SOTY would figure out what they want this show to be. Because I feel like, this is a show that has a lot of, you know, I don't want to say the phrase again. I'm trying to stop being repetitive, so I won't say cooks in the kitchen. But this is a show where there are a lot of people who have very vested stakes in The Young and the Restless. And I do know that those stakes are altruistic. Angelica McDaniel wants the show to stay on the air. Steve Kent wants the show to stay on the air. These are all good stakes. How to prepare those stakes on the grill is where we sometimes differ. And, you know, I just
barbecue
feel like
sauce
I have...
helps.
I just feel like...
It reminds
we go
you.
Around and around the same roller coaster with this show. Gene and Shelley were boring, so we have to go to Chuck Pratt, who goes batshit crazy. Sally was deemed boring, so we go back to Mal. And I'm just going to be honest, Mal's first air shows are strikingly resemblant to Chuck Pratt. I was thinking to myself, is this a straight man thing? Like, is it like straight white guys think action, adventure, rock 'em, sock 'em? But then I'm like, no, Bill Bell was as straight as an arrow, and he wrote character-driven shows for women, so it's not a straight guy thing. But I'm looking at your, you know, this is your first, you know, I'm gonna, you know, yes, first of all, he is wrapping up stories that he inherited, so any writer should always be given some time, because he's wrapping up stories that he inherited. But, you know...
But a lot of times, over the years, we found that the people, when they're wrapping it up, that's actually better than when they get to their own writing, because they're, and that's not happening this time for you.
Writing endings are fun, and you know. But I'll say this, like, you know, Victoria's headache story I thought was stupid, with Abby and the whole Abby pushed her down, and that's why she's been, you know, having headaches and being sexy and having sexy time with hot guys, you know, and being erratic and fainting, you know. So the fact that it was tainted face masks, hey, fine. We get a car accident that gets all the Newmans at, and I'm like, okay, so that's fine. You know, that didn't bother me. And I was Scotty waking up with the dead hooker, even though it was very resemblant to Jack Abbott with the hooker.
Yes.
You know, but I was like, okay, at least this, you know, kind of boring hooker story now has some meat. So I wasn't really triggered yet. When I got triggered, though, is when I saw the promo. Well, okay, so two things. The promo that, you know, Nick's restaurant is once again going to be in peril. You know, every time this show wants to try to spike ratings, they put one of these restaurants or bistros or places in jeopardy.
Burn the bitch down and don't build it back up.
And notice that Victoria is suddenly sinking her own money in rather than using other people's in business. So now, all of a sudden, Nick and Victoria are going to be broke.
Top of the tower. You know, remember that big adventure story with Top of the Tower a few years ago where Adam saved Genoa City. And then, you know, this is now the second time that Nick's Dive Bar, where I'm sure you can get all forms, all manner of hepatitis in the bathroom. This is the second time that it's been in peril. You know, it didn't it cave in a few years ago with Jack?
Yeah.
You know, and now it's going to be burned to the ground with the teenagers. You know, just I would love for someone to send Mal a link of Jesse and Angie and Tad and Liza, because I would really like to see a teen storyline, an actual beginning, middle, end romantic storyline with archetypical characters, you know, archetypal rather, you know, that really have, you know, angst and villains and Brittany Hodges's and Liza Colby's instead of, I don't even really know these teens yet. I know one of them's a nerd and one of them likes to play the guitar and they both annoy their parents. But now why am I going to care that they're burning up in a building just so that we can have a big promo that, and okay, now here's my other thing. Jack and Ashley Abbott are not action adventure characters. They're just not. They are the type of people, character-wise and on, you know, and in real life, they would have hired someone. This is where we miss making Paul no longer being a private dick and being the chief of police kind of hobbled this show. Because for years, the rich people all would... Now, Victor Newman is the type who would go on his own adventures and save the day.
Yep.
But Jack and Ashley are not. They would hire Paul to do that. They would hire
Jack
Paul...
Let's just be real. Jack too dainty for that.
And Jack and Ashley... And
some people don't like to get their hands dirty.
Here's the deal. This is not me being ageist. This is me being realistic about this genre and about the fact that they just do not care. They're so afraid. It's like when Franz and Barbara Bloom were in play, it was all about younger viewers, younger viewers, younger viewers, because Madison Avenue wants younger viewers. And so the panicked reaction back then was, well, let's kill off all the old people so that we can play up younger viewers, which was stupid. You didn't have to kill off the old people to play younger viewers. But now we've gotten to an era in daytime where it's, we don't want to shed anybody, so play the old people, play all the old people, play all the old people. Give the old people love triangles in their 70s, in their 80s, in their 90s. And it's like, okay, guys, let's just follow the trajectory of life a little bit. The fact that Abby is still being used as, like, you know, whenever they have Abby, yeah, and they have Abby give this, you know, play Greek chorus and, like, you know, give a bunch of exposition, like a vapid Cher from Clueless. That is so, can she not be Cher from Clueless anymore? Can she be Lori Brooks? She's a beautiful blonde bombshell, and she's 35 years old now.
Was it not depressing when Reed had to be the one who was like, come on, why don't I take you and get some food from the vending machine? It was pathetic.
But when she's like, you know, I have to decide between my crises, like, stop writing her like that. Stop writing her like a blithering idiot. She's a grown woman now. But Jack and Ashley should not be the ones racing off on action adventures to Florida. They're 60 years old. That's absurd, first of all. And Second of all, there's two 60-year-old siblings racing off because their 85-year-old mother has been kidnapped by a leather daddy porn star. I don't care about that. I like Dina. I thought Sally did a really good job in bringing them back, bringing her back and galvanizing the Abbotts. She took way too long to get to the denouement. That was, hey, guess what? I have Alzheimer's and I'm going to blurt out that Ashley's not John's kid. That took way too freaking long. That should have been a 30-week story.
Side note, they still haven't revealed that she got the Alzheimer's.
Can I ask you a question about this?
You can. Just one second, though. But it's like, Mal's instincts trouble me because, yes, you inherited some boring stories. I'm going to be real. That was, you know, Sally was great at getting the character right, but a lot of her stories were boring, which makes me, you know, I'm like, why couldn't they have met in the middle? Why is there in this industry so much scheming, conniving, and backbiting? I'm just going to be real here because Mal was lying in wait, preparing his Bible that was supposed to be so great, and I'm like, well, girl,
that's a Gideon Bible. That's a Gideon Bible.
Instead of this industry always with everyone lying in wait and conniving and scheming to try to see, like, the soap opera is really going on behind the scenes at these shows. Everybody's sitting up here on the make. It's like, why not? If Mal is good with Rock'em Sock'em, which definitely does spike the ratings during, you know, why not? We'll get a spike, I guarantee. And that's needed. You need someone who can spike the ratings at sweeps. You know, I feel Danny Strong and Lee Daniels have that kind of dynamic. But why couldn't they work together? Why is there so much? And I'm not saying it was all Mal's fault because, you know, there's always two sides to a story. Maybe Sally needed to be more collaborative. Maybe Mal needed to be more collaborative. Maybe Angelica needed to sit them down and get them to be more collaborative. But my thing is, if you have someone who really knows the characters and someone who really likes to blow shit up, maybe they could figure out how to work together and create a really good show. But what we get is either or. We get boring conversations about nothing, or we get rock 'em, sock 'em, bam, boom, 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 and no character whatsoever. I'm like, you know, and this whole look, Mal, look at here. I'm just going to tell you right now. I firmly support innovation and new ideas and moving the genre forward. Gloria Monty benchmarked from primetime in film when she saved General Hospital in 1978. But for every time that it's okay to do that, there have been disasters. Remember when when All My Children tried to go away from multicam and you know, the tape look to film? Fans balked. Fans did not like that. Remember all that gimmicky stuff God in Light did with the handy cams and a day in the light and a day in our ratings going down? Mal is not just trying to tweak. When he gave that interview and said, I want to do away with picking up from episode to episode, and I want Monday in Genoa City to be Monday in America, okay, you're doing away with the very, forget daytime, you're doing away with Dickens. You're doing away with cliffhangers. You're doing away with Tune In Tomorrow. You're doing away with Perils of Pauline. Will Pauline get untied from the railroad track? That is a hallmark of serialized storytelling. That is why people were waiting for that one Dickens novel when, you know, would that character die? You know, I can't remember which story it was, but you can't, you know, get rid of cliffhangers.
That's why people are waiting for the next Game of Thrones book.
I mean, even Scandal, you know, Olivia Pope was making out with the sexy Latino newspaper guy. Not newspaper, he's on TV. He's a broadcaster. And then Fitz is in her hallway, and we tune in the next week to see if Fitz, you know, is going to be like, hey, want to do a threesome? I mean, you know, it's like they picked up from that moment. Now, yeah, you move, and I get, and he said that sometimes they will do that. But I just fear that you're trying to do way too much too fast with something like that, especially with this show. I mean, if you want to compare The Young and the Restless at its greatest to a primetime show, it would be compared to something like Mad Men or Downton Abbey. Those are very slow-moving, serialized dramas. Yeah. Well, The Good Wife kind of, no. The Good Wife, not a good example because it had that procedural component, so it did move with a clip. But, you know, The Young and the Restless.
Cliffhangers.
Yeah, but no, my point is, though, The Young and the Restless was always a character-driven character study. It was, you know, plot, you know, came very slow. And I'm not, and here's the deal, though, about this, because and I think that Sally came back in, and you could definitely tell she was still, like, in her Bill Bell era mode. But there wasn't a lot of suspense and jeopardy and forward movement. Bill Bell's shows moved slow, but they moved with a purpose. There was always, even when it was Kay Chancellor alone in her living room, whatever she was saying to herself with Esther not dusting in the background moved story. Yes, Jill Abbott, it will be very soon that your day of reckoning will come. And then we cut to Jill doing something nasty that's going to allow Kay to bring about the aforementioned day of reckoning. That's where Sally was messing up, where we had Scotty, you know, sitting down talking to this pervert guy. Who's your dating? Who cares? We don't want to. Mindless conversations and minutia is a problem for every daytime soap right now, except for Bold and Days. Now, no matter what I say about Brad, Brad is very much focused on his end game. You got it. This is the thing. Plot driven is not a dirty word. It's become a dirty word in daytime, but you have to have a plot. But the plot should come from character. Days of Our Lives is the perfect example of that. Samantha Jean Brady came back to Salem on the hero journey.
She did. Back.
The inciting incident of the story was her learning that her beloved firstborn son might be alive. Rumors of his demise were greatly exaggerated. She shows up at that graveyard as her stepfather, who she has 20 years of tumultuous history with, is about to dig up her baby boy with the boy that he booted and tooted with and ruined his marriage, who is about to try to marry Will's husband. And that is soap opera! It's soap opera!
Listen, just when...
Before we get to the awesomeness of that, though...
I mean, Marlena just sent her R2-D2 and said, girl, your baby ain't dead! Your baby
just
ain't dead!
Just when Sammy and John started to tolerate each other, they became on an even point. They finally got there. John had the audacity to just disrespect and don't call her and say, Sammy, girl, we got to do this. He decides to just fast ass to dig him up.
Before we move on to Days, though, I want to ask you two questions because I had one and then you made me think of a second one, Jamie. The first one.
So whoever that met person is, you'll be really upset this time.
So whatever. The first question is because as I was watching those episodes where you were talking about Jack and Ashley going on the road to try and find their mother, and this is where, because I don't have as long a history with you and the Abbotts, I'm not familiar, but to me, I was watching it and I was thinking to myself, why are Jack and Ashley doing this? And why are they facing off with Graham? It would be so much more, at least for me personally, emotionally powerful and character driven if this was Tracy who was going down there and was having to go against it. And so my first question is, would that work based on the history? My second question is in terms of what you're talking about with Mal and the changes he's trying to make. Do you feel that the changes that he's talking about with changing the cliffhangers, changing the pacing, do you think that has something to do with his British soap background?
So here's, okay, I can be quick with this and succinct. So Jillian and I grew up watching The Young and the Restless. We adore Tracy. We know that Tracy is just as integral to the Abbott tapestry as Jack and Ashley. However, that is not how she is regarded by Sony and the network at this point in the game. They consider Tracy a critter. That's a term that is used at multiple soaps for characters that are brought in to enhance story but should not drive story themselves. It's not about looks or it's not about anything like that, because when I first heard the term, I heard it back in the Maria Arena Belle days, and I was like, why are they calling people critters? But they don't mean it like they're a critter as an animal, but
it's not derogatory.
They consider characters like Tracy, Gloria, the maid Esther, those are critters. They're not there to get their own arc. They're there to support the leads, and Jack and Ashley are considered the leads. So that's why they would never send Tracy on the adventure to best Graham. So there's that question. Now to the UK soap thing. Thank God, whoever you fans were who just damn near demanded me watch one, because before I wouldn't have been able to comment. But since I've spent the last year and a half watching Emmerdale, I can say this. Emmerdale at its best is just like a U.S. daytime show at its best, when it leads from character. In the last couple of months, Emmerdale has gotten plot-driven and has been annoying for a lot of the fans. Now, I will say I'm still so relatively new to the show that plot-driven for Emmerdale is still... like
more character driven than most of the daytime soaps.
It's still like when I see the people getting upset, I'm like, this is still better than anything I've seen on US daytime in 10 years. And this is a plot driven era of the show. For me, this is the thing. Yeah, Emmerdale, since I've been watching, I don't know their advertising structure or whatever, but I know that every fall they do some big rock'em sock'em, everybody on the canvas is in jeopardy event. Now they do it. They use a heck of a lot of money. They spend a ton of money. They film outdoors. They crash bridges. I mean, they really, and I think the other shows do this too. EastEnders and Coronation Street. They spend a lot of money to do that. So very much akin to how U.S. daytime used to do it. I mean, if you go back and look at Luke and Laura's Wedding and all the money spent on that sucker, it was like, but so that's my one thing. So UK soaps have a better budget. The Young and the Restless does not have a budget anymore for disasters. So they look cheap and they look sad and they look depressing. And so when I can get that from Grey's Anatomy, you know, every sweeps, I just really, Martha Byrne said it best. Daytime soaps are at their best when it's people sitting around a room talking and going through drama. Now, that doesn't mean talking about boring stuff. If you go look at soaps in the 70s in their true heyday, because they were more successful in the 70s than they were in the 80s. You know, they just had the peak in the 80s, but... overall, the 70s is when they were truly successful, and they were stage plays brought to life. You know, you had two powerhouse thespians on a set ripping into each other. You had Michael Zaslow and Maureen Garrett in a marriage that was putrid and disgusting and rape-filled and toxic, and you had the two of them on a set, and you had television gold. You had, you know, Victoria Windham and Beverly McKenzie on a set dealing with old school Greek tragedy of the fact that this daughter wants to fuck her own daddy and she hates his young trophy wife. That's all you needed. So that is where I'm coming from. Character first. The fact that Mal's first inclination was to send Jack and Ashley off on an adventure to snatch up their 8-year-old mother. What were you going to say?
And Victoria, they regurgitated Gloria's story on, too.
You know, the fact that his first inclination with his, okay, I've been saying put me in, coach, because, you know, Mal has said that he's wanted this ever since the Jill Farren Phelps days. So it troubles me that your first inclination is not, let me learn these characters. Your first inclination is adventure for Jack and Ashley, kidnapping for Dina, car crash for Victoria, burn down the club. Your first inclination, dead hookers. So your first inclinations as
bad
impression, as you know, Mike wrote a post about it. My first impression of Mal Young as his own storyteller is he's going to be super plot driven and super pratt. He's going to be super pratty, and that is not what this show needs. So we're going to have a year of this. We can sing this song. We can sing this song and like the hallelujah chorus. The ratings will go up initially because people do tune in for even bad stunts. And then the
Jill Theron Phelps has taught us that.
You know, the characters will go so far from who we know them to be that there will be huge discontent. And let me just tell you, Dad Luckin' Bill is coming back. And honey child, if the story they want to tell, I'm not going to say nothing else about it, but I'm just going to say character and who people really are really needs to be paid attention to, because they're going to piss off long-term fans. And then we're going to be back a year from now bringing back Gene out of retirement or something else. I just get exhausted with this show. It's like, why can't there be a marriage between character and plot? It is possible. You definitely, I'm not stupid. We all know that 4 months out of the year, you gotta spike the numbers for Mad Avenue. That's fine. But tell a damn story those 3 months leading up to it.
And you don't have to regurgitate. You don't have to regurgitate old stories with this whole face cream thing making Victoria batshit crazy.
Well, here's my thing, though. This, you know, I just always go from character first. Now, this whole Victor thing and Nick, you know, first of all, I love me some Nick Newman. He has been one of my favorite heartthrobs since he's been on the show, but he is not a worthy screen fighter with Eric Braeden. I mean, he's not Michael Muni. He's not Justin Hartley. I'm just going to be real. He's not.
But he's a really good...
He is a heartthrob. He is a romantic lead.
Boy Scout.
But he is not good in the, you know, me going against my dad. That needs to be a stronger actor. Just going to say it. I'm just going to be real. So he needs to be in your romantic storylines. So that's, now that we got that settled. But if you want to do a story about the Newmans, instead of that stupid dive bar burning down, the first thing Victor would have done to piss Nick off after he makes this grand gesture to give away all of his money is for Victor to call in Noah, Summer, and Sharon by proxy for Faith and tell them, since your father has given away your birthright, I have taken steps to set up trust funds for each of you in the amount of $500 million and have him divide up $500 million in a trust for Noah, Faith, and Summer. That would, think about it. You know, one of my best friends, and you know, straight men are really weird. So my best friend got married, right? He married, like, his wife is loaded. Her family's loaded. So he got his first new house.
She got a brother.
They do, girl, and they all look like young Kennedys, but we'll talk about that afterwards. So,
give me that. No, yeah, you can
so, yeah, they are like total, like, you know, Ralph Lauren look-alike, you know, models. Anyway, so, you know, he married this chick who is loaded. And so they got their first new house or whatever, you know, her parents gave him the down payment. So he was all, you know, grabbing his cock about that. I'm, you know, I'm gay, so I'm like, what's the big deal? If the dad wants to give you money for the house, I'd be like, thank you, daddy-in-law. And he's like, I want to do stuff on my own. And I'm like, okay, girl. So anyway, so the backyard was a mess. And so he was like, I'm going to surprise my wife and I'm going to work. And, you know, I'm going to, I'm going to basically make her the yard of her dreams. So the parents, the wealthy parents came by to visit. He wasn't there. And so the dad looks at the backyard and goes, oh, the yard's a mess. You know what? I'm going to give you guys another wedding present. So my friend gets home and there are tons of workers in the backyard. The dad just dropped down $10,000 to fix the yard. And so my friend calls me livid, like, I wanted to do that. You know, it's like, I'm her husband now. And I'm like, I don't understand what's happening. Why are we mad? Why are white people mad when people give them gifts? Daddy, come fix my yard. But, you know, that's a guy thing. That's a straight guy thing. So Nick's whole thing, supposedly,
I don't think it's necessarily straight guys alone.
Oh, you take that free yard. I know you, buddy. Anyway, you take
I would take it, but that doesn't mean that my pride isn't going to be hurt.
My pride wouldn't be hurt, but Nick Newman's pride obviously would be hurt. Because
yes.
That's his whole driving point now. I want to do it on my own. I want to start this adventure that I don't even understand. I don't know what they're trying to do. We're going to have a bar where we can have acts at. I'm like, every bar in the world is a bar where people can perform. I don't understand y'all business plan. Wells Fargo and Citibank is not finna give y'all any money for that business plan anyway, Noah and Nick, because y'all are Tweedledee and Tweedledum. But anyway, he's like, I want to do it all on my own. So then if Victor comes in and makes a grand gesture in front of the whole family and, you know, gives Nick, basically sets up a trust that gives Noah what's
it'd be
a
about
third
the equivalent. It would be about the equivalent of $150 million apiece, somewhere in there.
You know, and they're like, oh my God, Grandpa. You know, Noah's like, I can start my own record label. Dang. And, you know, Nick is thinking Sharon is going to be on his side. And she's like, thank you, Victor. I feel so much safer now about Faith's future, you know, of running around being a little precocious mess.
And now Sharon can afford to pursue her degree that she's with,
you know,
this week
Nick
just
like,
made me, ugh.
What do you mean, Sharon? You know, Dad's done all this stuff for you. Shut up, Nick. He just made us rich again, yo dumbass. And even Phyllis being like, you know what? I can't stand your father, but you just, you know, Summer's kind of a dummy, and you just left her without a safety net. Thank you, Victor. And then they all leave, and Nick is just, you know, steaming that his father has bested him again, and he's trying
to
talk.
No, no, no. I would have Phyllis be begrudgingly, you know, I would have Phyllis a little bit upset because, you know, Phyllis does not have any love for Victor, and for her to be like, great, my daughter is once again beholden to your damn daddy.
That's why Jillian would be a good co-head. Because, yeah, let Sharon be the one. Nikki could make a quip. Well, she always was a gold digger. You know, yeah, you're right. And Phyllis, you know, Victor did basically arrange her rape. So, no, let Phyllis, like Jillian's right, let Phyllis be like, Summer, don't take the devil's bargain. But, you know, let Victor basically say, I one-upped you again, boy, because you can't tell me I can't. Because
you're not man enough.
And then Nick can be like, Faith is not accepting this money. And Sharon being like, oh, the hell she isn't. And then Victor's like, well, I'll make Sharon the trustee over it since you don't want to be over it. You know,
and that would be tons of feuding for Nick and Sharon.
Nick finally decides the only way to neutralize this son of a bitch is to take his power base. So then he decides to figure out a way, as God is his witness, like Scarlet in that fucking patch eating the radish, I'm going to steal Newman Enterprises from my father. And that is, now he's on a character's hero's journey. He has a drive now because he realizes this guy's going to keep on knocking us kids down into the dirt unless I take from him everything that he has in his arsenal to keep doing this to me. And the first step Nick can use to do that, hello, he still knows that the man got Chloe out of the nut house to kill his brother, you know, even though that wasn't Victor's goal. That is a huge weapon. Use what is already set up when you take over a show. That is what I am loving about Ron. Ron is not just disregarding all of the plot turkeys that he inherited from Dina Higley. He is taking them and turning that manure, that shit, into manure and making rose blossoms. Deimos married Eve Donovan. Gold digging singer Eve Donovan is going to come back loaded for bear, ready to take on the Kyriakises and be like, hey, Victor, boo, 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 I'm your sister-in-law, bitch. I got me some Kira-Ocasis money.
Just okay. When Sunny and
Maggie.
Just when Sunny and
in my room, you know.
With Sunny and Brady fighting over that for her to come in and be like, "Bitch, y'all ain't doing nothing without my."
There is a ton to talk about with Days. We've got Eric and Brady facing off, the wedding, what you just mentioned, Sammy's return, Jillian. What was the best moment for you this last week on Days of Our Lives?
I mean, there were tons of great moments because when Judy Evans, I asked on Twitter, I was like, she got a contract or nah? Because if nah, she needs to be on contract because
selling her funeral plots. I'm like,
I heard.
Selling funeral plots. Look at her. I would have to be the highest paid actress on that set after Allison Sweeney if it was up to me.
Okay, add Eileen Davidson, okay? Because I'm like, oh my God. She acted her face off. She put her foot in it. She put her stank on it when she had those scenes. The jail scenes, when she had that meltdown when that warden was like, bitch, you can't make that phone call no more. I'm tossing you in the shoe. And she flipped out and was like, no! I was like, damn. She acted her face off when she told Maggie about her ass, about how she stole her Mickey, and how she went off on them Kiriakuses. It was, ooh, she was so damn good. It was like, she morning, noon, and night, she was fantastic. You already know my girl Allison Sweeney came and showed up and showed out.
Oh, yes, she did.
You said me, not you. You said me, not you, so you hush. When she came in there, Hope is the suckiest cop. I'm sorry. I know that's your girl. I know that's your girl, but she made me come through mad.
She's almost as bad as the Port Charles PD.
Y'all gonna shut up.
But it's true. That's the problem. You can't deny it because it's true.
Yes, I can. Hope is a G.
Nope, because Hope figured out that Hattie was damn Marlena.
Thank you.
So,
Hope is not those Keystone cops in General City.
She's one notch below Dante.
No, she ain't. You a lie. And the truth ain't in you. Until you can open Grandpa Horton's mystery puzzle box, you shut up.
She might be one notch above John McBane, but one below Dante.
Y'all acted like some petty criminal bested Hope.
Sammy came in there, grabbed that gun, and held Rolf at gunpoint. It was epic.
She's Sammy. It is not like Hope was bested by a toy criminal.
And when Sammy was in the police station and she was like, either get on board because I'm doing it or else, it was epic.
Hold up. No, shut you over there. Hush. I'm still saying my piece.
Well, then we'll get to mine.
Hush. The only reason why I said Hope sucked as a cop is because she was being toe-faced with Sammy when she was like, you can't do that. I'm the commissioner. And da-da-da-da. When Sammy was like, ugh, this is coming from the hoe that killed Stefano DiMera. I was like, thank you. Like, come on, Hope. You can't pick apples and oranges.
But Hope, they've addressed that. She, you know, yeah.
But that doesn't mean Sammy's not going to use it.
Oh, yeah. And that was great use of history. She shot him. She didn't kill him. He's alive. But yeah. Anna Devane did the same thing. Anna Devane and Hope Brady both shot, you know, their enemies in cold blood, and their enemies were redeemed to redeem them. But let's be real here. Hope Williams Brady went easy on Sammy because that's her niece. Hope could have taken Sammy down. Let me tell you, Hope could have taken her down, but that's her niece.
Well, this is what happens when you get a little bit of Rafe. It dilutes your impact.
No, I feel as though I agree with Jamie, and I also think Sammy played the mom card on her with Zach. I think that's why.
Hope was basically like, look at her, girl. I loved your Uncle Bo, so I'm not going to take my gun back from you and kick you in your cat, because y'all know Hope can do it. That's how Billy Reed learned that Gina was really Hope. Well, she finally got a clue, because remember when they didn't know that Gina was really Hope, you know, Billy and Hope was walking at Ballistics. Or was it somewhere? and a mugger grabbed. Did the mugger grab Billy's purse and take off running? And Billy stood up there, and Hope turned into Stealth Woman, Police Woman, and knocked the shit out that mugger and got her purse back. And Billy was like, "How you know how to do that?" And Gina Hope was like, "I don't know." And I'm yelling at the TV, "Cause she Hope, bitch! She Hope, Brady! She finna take your man, is what she finna do." So Hope could have subdued Sammy, but that's her niece, and she was being nice. Plus, I think Hope wanted Sammy to do that, really. She knew she was going to have to arrest her. See, I'm liking how Ron is treating, because it's always been absurd with every soap town that every cop is related to all the criminals and all the everybody else. They are playing that with Hope. She had to suspend JJ. Now she had to arrest her niece. But I think Hope allowed Sammy to do it because they got what they need. They got further along, even though Ralph took the cyanide pill. They at least got confirmation that Will is alive. We just don't know who Ralph was working for. But that was epic. Sammy took that gun, and first she was like, "I'm going to shoot you if you don't do what I say." And he's like, "I don't have to listen to you. Bloop, I'm a pistol
well,
whip you."
She pistol whipped him. I had a heart attack.
Turned into Sweet Daddy on Good Times. She is a pimp. She pistol whipping folks.
I have been criticized for a number of years for a certain little occasion in which I may have said that Allison Sweetie was one of the best actresses. And I still stand by it because she came back in after having been gone.
She's one of the best soap stars.
She did not miss a beat. She came in, rocked the place. It was as she was never gone.
You know I love Allison Sweetie just like you do, but this is the thing. When you say she's one of the best actresses, I roll my eyes because Beverly McKenzie don't have an Emmy. That's what, I mean, here's the deal.
Beverly McKenzie is dead. I'm talking about the present.
Oh, shit. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Lord.
I'm talking about the present, not the past.
Allison Sweetie, like Susan Lucci, is a great soap opera star, and she is a good actress. She is a very serviceable, good actress, and she was robbed her Emmy nomination when Sammy was on death row. But in terms of one of the best actresses in daytime, you stand alone with that.
And I am more than happy to stand alone because this last week she just brought it.
Judith Light, Erica Slezak, Beverly McKenzie, Kim Zimba.
All of which are no longer in daytime.
Not knowing history when you make grandiose statements.
Here is the thing that I'm going to go, because I'm going to keep going. Jillian had her turn, and I'm going. Sammy was epic from beginning to end. It was every single moment I felt like I was watching the Days of Our Lives that I loved, because Sammy was driving so much good storyline from the scenes with Eric to the scenes with Nicole to the scene. I mean, since her arrival, things have played out really, really well. And all of a sudden, I am feeling what I was looking for when Ron took over, because now he has the perfect vessel to tell his story.
When we were all gushing about Rod's early achievements and Luke was still kind of magenta, I'm like, he's waiting for Sammy.
And the moment I put up the first impressions post on Daytime Confidential, Jamie called me up. "So, I see it didn't take you very long to put up something about Sammy being back." And I'm like, you better damn believe it.
Oh, he did that. Okay.
But it wasn't just Sammy's return that was great this week. It was the fact that finally we had the culmination of the Bonnie and Adrian storyline. Bonnie on the run with the glasses. I was able to meme those myself. It was wonderful. Eric versus Brady and the fight and the build up to the fight with Eric talking to Jennifer. It was wonderful.
They are Luke and Leia. I'm telling you, like, Sammy and Eric are Luke and Leia. They're also kind of like Prince Adam and Princess Adora in He-Man and She-Ra. And their mother's name is Marlena, just like on He-Man and She-Ra. How about that? Although Marlena's not an astronaut. She's a shrink. And, you know, but they are, like, I just really wish that, I mean, I know that she's making all her cupcake movies, but I really wish that Allie would just stay, like, just stay, just go ahead.
Oh my God, yes.
Because amazing, you know, like, now that we have Sammy back, now that Eric versus Brady is on fire, and all these other storylines, at least for me, are finally all starting to fall into place, the return of Eileen Davidson is only going to make it that much crazy better, and I cannot wait. It is going to be amazing. And you know what's so wonderful about this as a longtime Days fan? Well, that didn't really matter to me because I don't have history with her. I don't have history with her, so that didn't really register with me. But for the first time after... I do know the song, but I love the song, but I would have never connected Waterfalls with T-Boz. Never. But for the first time in years, after having spent many years having Days of Our Lives at the bottom of my year-end list, the fact that I'm going to be able to go into the end of year podcast with a Days of Our Lives that is on fire and a General Hospital that is okay, I am like, I don't know what I'm going to do this year. Jamie, what did you think of Days of Our Lives this week? Jamie, what did you think?
Didn't you like what Sammy, play with yourself over there, Luke. Didn't you like what Sammy, with John picking that lock? No. But John picking that lock, Sammy, he all trying to be quiet. Sammy kicked in that door like, bitch, ain't nobody got time for that. She was happy.
Everyone in town, they know that it's a waste of time at this point to tell her to calm down and to tell her to take a beat.
Marlena was like, this is one time I'm just not going to even try.
No. When she told Hope, when Sammy said, promise Hope, I'm not going to fuck up. I promise Hope. And it's Hope, Marlena goes to Hope, I promise I'm going to be with her. And Hope looks at her like, bitch. And she was like, I'm going to bring back Hope. I'm like, she was like, yeah, you need to bring
everybody. It's like, Sammy is that girl. When she called Rafe, Rafe had just said something about people being erratic.
And he was like, speak of the devil, it's Sammy.
Like, she is like the eternal child. She never grows up. You know, whenever there were those writers who were like Hogan Schuffer, we're going to grow Sammy up. It's like, no, bitch,
nope, you are not.
You can't grow characters like Sammy or Brooke or, I mean, they can have growth. Characters need to grow and change. But at their root, they need to be what made you fall in love with them. Princess Leia and Han Solo were still at their root why the characters we fell in love with all these years later. Han Solo was still a rogue. Yes, he was a father, and did that inform him that he had had a great love and lost a great love and lost a son to the dark side of the Force? It's just like, you know, which if it wasn't out of space, that would just be myth, you know? But he was still Han Solo. He was still that guy. You know, as much as he got on my nerves in real life, the actor, Luke Spencer stayed that guy his whole time. Sammy is that girl. We want her coming in, not following the rules, taking her auntie's gun and pistol whipping somebody.
And you heard what Kate said. I missed that hoe. I was
Yes.
For most of my time watching them.
Frenemies. For me, Kate and Sammy are Vicky and Dorian, but better.
But like it because they keep the balance delicate. You know, these two women love each other because they have had a lot of shit go down between them, but they'll still cuss each other out. It's not like what Bold and the Beautiful did with Brooke and Stephanie, with, you know, Ridge proposing, you know, mommy always wanted me with you. It's like, no, she didn't, Brad. Stop saying that. That's not true to the history of the show. Sammy and Kate can hug each other and be like, bitch, I love you, but I'll punch you out. But they love each other because they love Will, because they love Lucas, and because at the end, at Sammy's end game, they took over Demira and were like, let's let these men know we run shit. This is ladies' night, and my rhymes are tight. And then she kissed Chad. She was like, yeah, you little hoe. Even though you a recast and you wasn't the one that hunched my man, I'm finna kiss you. I'm gonna stick my tongue down your man.
And Chad never felt such ecstasy.
And I'm so glad Ron gave Sammy her money back, because, you know, either Dina or Josh had Sammy sign over all her money to bail. You know, Allison Sweeney.
No, she's like, I got the money back, and it's why I've been in hiding.
Allison Sweeney talked about that in a Digest interview. She was like, yeah, when I learned that Sammy gave all her money to bail, I was like, what the heck? Sammy would never do that. Exactly. Sammy ain't dumb like Nick Newman. She got her $500 million. She said, you know, which I did wonder when she was like, I got to call Sonny to bail me out. I'm like, chick, ain't you got $500 million?
No, well, she can't bail herself out. She can't bail herself out if she's in police custody.
Oh, I didn't know that. They don't let you use
you have to have someone come do it.
Well, I am not a criminal. I don't know.
Shit, I learned that on Roseanne. I ain't no criminal too, bitch. What you trying to say?
Speaking of criminals, Port Charles, real Jason Morgan has returned in the form of Patient 6. He burst through a skylight.
Porn star this week, my friend.
He burst through the skylight in scenes that Jamie teased to me before I had a chance to watch it, and they lived up to what he was going off on. Jamie and I were having a discussion about what, and I asked him, he was like, they were amazing, Luke. They were really amazing. And I'm like, were they as good as the shootout scenes with Faith Roscoe?
What did I tell
you? And he was like, General Hospital doesn't have the budget to do that, but they were really good.
That was up there, because, like, listen, after he and Sonny had that little boy's mind soliloquy or whatever, I don't know what that was. I was like, good God.
After all the starts, we keep coming back to these two.
I was like, good God. Listen, Linda. When he was peeping over that skyline and saw that he had his woman, that Russian fool had his woman, he was like, and jumped through there. I said, oh! I said, okay.
That is why we watch soaps. I'm not even going to lie. You want that hero. It's like that was holding out for a hero. He's sitting there. You know, he sees Sam in jeopardy. Dante is over there being the Keystone cop that he is, bothering his daddy. I bet Sonny is like, boy, I wish I would have nutted in a rag that night I was with your mama. You get on my nerves. The only crooked you want to talk to is me. And so Monica is like, hey, everybody, how you doing, Sam? Hey, everybody, here I am. I'm Monica. And then Sam gets, got with the needle. Patient 6 sees it.
The real Jason Morgan.
He's bust his feet down through there. I said, okay. Now that is some badassery. Now,
it was, and here's the thing for me.
The other Jason there, but they're face-to-face. They're basically pacing it out. Their face-to-face is coming.
This is when I really wish Brian Franz was still in charge of it, because you know good and well that if he were still at ABC Daytime, the real Jason Morgan campaign would have aired.
No, and that's tacky, and it would have been just as tacky and ignorant and gross to the actor who has been in the role for 5 years as the real. That real Greedley campaign has gone down as one of the biggest misfires in daytime television history. That was not, I know you liked Greenlee, so you enjoyed it, but that was a very gross campaign. And there's already a little bit of that because, they're not making a lot of the story choices equitable, in my opinion. Sonny and Carly, now I have to gripe, because Sonny and Carly have readily accepted that Billy Miller's Jason is Jason for years, and now a week leading up, that is very Brad Bell, that a week or two leading up to it, so there's just been something different about Jason. There's just been something really different about Jason. And it's like, y'all have not been saying that in a long time. It's like, now you're just noticing that he's 10 years younger than he should be.
And I think that and they split the difference with the age, because Jason was born in 80. Now they're trying to split the difference, because you see on that birth certificate for Andrew, he was born in 70 and 6. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
Well, they do that all the time on daytime when they age the characters back or forward. But my thing is, the reason it's wonky is you just didn't need to add Franco back to this mix for
agreed.
This is where you're, you know, it's like, you know,
and Black
we're being asked to believe that 30-something Billy Miller, 40-something Steve Burton, and how old is Roger Howarth? These three actors are all three different ages,
okay,
and now we're supposed
to look it up right now.
We're supposed to believe that they were like Huey, Louie, and Dewey.
Steve Burton is 47.
I'm like, Billy Miller
Roger Howarth is 49.
Those two cats were going on their first dates and trying to cop
and
a
Billy
feel.
Miller is 38.
Well, Steve wasn't trying to cop a feel. He was reading the Bible on his first date. But Billy Miller was somewhere in a diaper when those guys were going on their first date. So trying to act like they're all the same age is a bit goofy. But all that being said, the magic of TV, Scarlett O'Hara's mama was the same age as Scarlett in Gone with the Wind. And Angela Lansbury, didn't she play Elvis's mama once? So, I'll suspend disbelief. But I'm just saying, I have a lot of pop culture knowledge.
I thought that a dialogue that they said, I don't know, I felt as though they were trying to, the dialogue that Sonny said to Jason, because let's just be real, Steve is Jason now. I felt like the dialogue that Sonny uttered to him when they were in that safe house, I'm like, you're kind of like trying to me, it felt like they were saying without saying how they felt in real life, because I this is what Sonny said when they were talking with Jason, was like, no, I don't want to disrupt Sam's life. He says something like this. Okay, you know, he says, she thinks she's you. He's going through this, blah, blah, blah. And this is what he said and stuck out with me. He said, it's like she wants to connect with him, but she does on a certain level because he's a good guy and has good intentions, but he's not you. And I was like, are y'all trying to shit? Y'all trying to say something? Are y'all trying to say something?
The thing of it is,
you know, here, the reality of this is that as great of an actor as Billy Miller is, for various reasons, they never really figured out who he was as Jason Morgan. Billy reminds me of a young Tony Geary or a young Michael E. Knight that brings a lot of his own personality and
vibe
to a role. So sticking him, I'm just going to be real. I'm going to go back to what I said when it happened. Sticking someone who is that personable and, you know, funny.
He should have been lucky.
And has so much range, he should never have been Jason. Now, I'm going to go out and tell the truth because I'm just telling all kind of truths today for me. He's a better actor than Steve Burton. I'm going to be real. He is. I am going to just say it. Billy Miller, when he wants to be, because Billy has to be engaged by the material to want to.
Yep.
But when Billy wants to show up and show out, he is one of the best in daytime to do it. His range is great. That's why Jillian christened him Killer Miller. You know, the saving grace of his performance as Jason has been the connection and the romance that he has managed to build on camera with Kelly Monaco, because their Jason and Sam made me a fan of Jason and Sam. And this is when I had no idea that Steve would ever come back.
That's when he was still petting rocks.
Because Steve said he would never come back and all this and that. But, you know, Steve Burton is very much just like Allison Sweeney was born to play Sammy Brady. Steve Burton was born to play Jason Morgan. Jason Quartermain was kind of a boring dud, but the moment they busted his head up against that white meat and he morphed into the Borg, he became a daytime superhero, and he is great at that. And this will give Billy Miller the chance to play a new character that they can start from scratch with and that can incorporate his range and his strength, because putting him in to be the Borg, which, you know, let's just be real, that was Frank Valentini's way to stick it to Jill Farren Phelps because of their silly multi-soap casting war that would never end back then. You know,
so here's a question.
It wasn't a smart move anyway. It was never a smart move. He's 10 years younger than Steve. He's way
I want,
too young.
I want to react.
And Laura's best friend. And, you know, but to his credit, he had killer chemistry with both of Steve's leading ladies. And, you know, Kelly still want to work with him.
I've got a few more comments about that. But before I get to it, I just want to ask you a hypothetical. Considering the fact that Billy Miller's character was brought back by Helena and the history that we have with it. Would you, at either of you, at this point, be willing to have it a revelation that he's really lucky?
No! That is so stupid! And it's, look, Luke, you would so get hired to run one of these shows because you think like them. We already have two Jasons, and now we're going to have two Carlys, and what?
Speaking of which, Tamara Braun is returning, as you first reported. And
if Frank could do it, he would resurrect Liz Taylor and bring her on at the same time as Constance Towers. It's just stupid. It's stupid. No.
Okay, oh, so now that you've had a chance to respond to that, I want to continue with my thoughts on it. I thought that Steve Burton has been doing a really good job. The scenes that he's had, even though I wasn't a fan of Sonny and Jason back in the day, seeing him and Maurice Bernard reconnect was good. But for me, the best, it was like the gummy bear gang is back together again. But
that's on you.
Well, no, that's me alluding to a YouTube video clip. But for me, the most important or the best thing about it was Monica, because Monica, when she saw his face, you saw it in her eyes. You saw it in her expression.
She's a believer.
And as someone who's been having trouble with the Quartermain storylines, because Tracy's no longer around, because Michael is an idiot and his life is surrounded by Nell and just is whatever. The few bright spots for me with Monica have been her versus Olivia, but I don't want Olivia to win. But seeing that expression, Monica seeing Steve Burton's Jason, immediately took me back to all of those scenes with Lila's passing, with all of the emotional scenes that have played out between those two characters.
Between the Quartermains, yeah.
It was epic. And then the fact that once he was gone, she went to Sonny and was like, Sonny, you know what's going on. And there was no question in her mind that she knew that Sonny knew something because of the history between her and Sonny and them.
She looked at Sonny's face and
she knew it. Monica is
even have to flinch. She was like, you know something. Come over here.
The thing is, without Laura being on the show right now, for me, Monica is the linchpin for Heritage on this show. And the fact that she's now back in the hospital, the fact that we're seeing her sort of relive some of her highlights versus Olivia, and now that we have Steve Burton back as Jason, she is so pivotal to making the heritage of this show come through.
From a history perspective and a character perspective, one thing that they must address once this is all said and done and we've had our kumbayas and we know who is who, Jason must be pissed off that Sonny killed AJ. He must be pissed off. That must bother him, because he and Sonny had an unspoken code. He didn't kill Rick when he wanted to. 1,000 times, Jason had Rick Lansing.
Remember that scene when they were at that old beach house and Sonny and Rick were there and they were going over it and Sonny realized, shit, you're my mama's child. And Jason bust in there and he had that gun on Rick and he goes, no, you can't kill him. And he's like, why not?
They have to deal with that ugliness. Jason has to get furious when he finds out that AJ is dead, because even with all the bad blood between AJ and Jason, he still loved his brother. That was always there, even when, you know, at AJ's worst, the last Billy Warlock stint, when he came back and was just really being, you know, kidnapping Little Red and all the evil stuff he did, Jason still wanted to try to save that boy. And, you know, he always sided with Sonny and Carly, which that infuriated fans. But you could see that he had that soft spot for. So the fact that Sonny killed his brother and that Carly aided and abetted after the fact, and that, you know, basically, this is all just good character beats for them to play.
If and let's Frank hope will, they do it.
You know, and, you know, he's got this new, you know, Ava's his buddy. So it's like, yeah, one of the things should be, you know, Sonny and Carly being pissed off because they now have to deal with the fact that their mortal enemy saved their best friend. But then before Jason can get too chummy with her, he needs to learn. And they can quit talking about Connie because don't nobody care about Connie but Olivia and Dante. But he needs to learn the role that she played in AJ's demise. That is such a rich treasure trove of story potential between these characters that, you know, could happen here. I mean, there's more to this. There's so much more that happened than just, you know, who will Jason screw at the end of the day. You know, he needs to walk back the last 5 years. You know, Robin needs to come into play. You know, he needs to really figure out.
You know, they set a little bit of that up. They set a little bit of that up when Sonny took him down memory lane. And when he was like, Robin's alive. And when he was like, you know, she's in a good place now. She's happy now. She's in a good place. After all that, she's in a good place. They still need to bring her back to play those beats, though.
Yeah.
They need to bring her back
and
to play those beats.
I cannot wait for his scenes with Rebecca Herbst. Cannot wait.
Yeah, he needs to hate. Whereas that's one of the things with Billy's Jason that never rang true from the writing, that they treat his, you know, relationship with Franco as like this bickering.
No.
They treat it like any normal relationship where your ex old lady is dating some cat that you don't like and they're bickering in the, you know, no.
We saw what happened.
Franco. Jason, real Jason has to be like, the second he's like, in fact, they should set it up in some sort of way where he hasn't been told that Liz is dating him. And we see them in an embrace and he just goes Borg and tries to kill
Absolutely.
Franco.
And because if you watch those scenes when original Franco was on the show and everything that he put this Jason through, you cannot ignore that history. I mean, Franco should literally fear for his life now. He should not be able to be going around painting things for invalid children in the hospital. He should be in total fear of his life.
And Jason, because Jason also has had brain maladies, he, you know, the fact that Franco had a tumor should not be, because that's one of the things that they've always driven home about Jason's accident. He still had free will to go back to the Quartermains or not. He didn't have an emotional connection with them anymore. He didn't have a memory of them anymore. But he chose his new life with Sonny, which that's what Monica and Alan just couldn't and Edward couldn't bear, that he chose to you know, eschew everything that he was. So, you know, brain tumor made me do it should not be enough of an excuse for him. He should still want Franco's pound of flesh, and when he can't get that resolution, when Liz digs in her heels and is like, look, this is who I'm with now, I have forgiven him, I love him, he should go to Diane and there should launch a new custody battle. A custody battle, actual stakes that matter, because who cares about Lulu's little egg baby with weirdo Valentine of the opera, you know, no. Jason and Liz once loved each other, so that custody battle would be so palpable. There's no way he's going to be okay with Franco the serial killer living in the same, spending the night under the roof with his the dead son.
And I think that should be something that Jason should say to her, for Jason to be like, did you really think, for Jason, you know, for her to be like, I thought, you know, when they go over that, for him to throw that up in her face and be like, you honestly really thought that I would have been cool with you shacking up with Franco after all of this shit that he did? For him to throw that up in her face.
And
for
Drew should go after ELQ. Yes, he started his little media company, but we have been lacking. Michael is so not a worthy heir to ELQ.
No.
Drew should go head-to-head against Ned. Put Wally Kurth on contract and recall the great rivalries.
No, I want him over at Dave.
No, I mean, I'm going to be real. I love me some Justin and Adrian. I have more history with Justin and Adrian, but no. With the quarterman, the Kiriakis, there are so many Kiriakises in Salem that if Justin decided to go back to Ooby Dooby for a minute, I'd be okay with that. Okay, fine.
Abu
Don't put
Dhabi?
Him on contract. So, Ooby Dooby Dobby Dobby.
No.
But,
I
Justin,
can't.
Okay, well then at least play him heavily as Ned and have Ned be his mother. Have Ned, you know, be like Tracy and basically say, my line, the Tracy Quartermain line is the future of ELQ, not Alan's line. And you have Drew basically become, you know, not like AJ, because AJ was the born loser, but a worthy rival to Ned. And you recast Michael and get a decent Michael, I'm going to just say it. You bring back Brooklyn, and then we have a ball game. We have a house full of Quartermains with Monica as the matriarch. You know, bring back Brooklyn. You know, bring back Dylan. Get a good Dylan. You know, that guy was serviceable. But, you know, there are so many actors out there. What's Casey Diedrick doing? You know, what's that Hapka boy? Mark Hapka could be Dylan. You know, get a good Dylan. Get a Michael with a ball sack, with a big, hairy ball sack, a man Michael. You know, not this little wimpy boy Michael who keeps getting suckered by this, like, you know, yeah, go away. They suck donkey ass, both of them. You know, get rid of her.
I'm so glad you finally agree.
I've never liked Bill.
No, like with Michael, when I would critique Michael over the years, you would always give me
I
a hard time.
I basically thought that, you know, I get to where I'm like, well, it's resolved. But now I'm fired up because GH is good again. And it would be good if we had a good Michael, a good strapping man who can come in there and, you know, a good Dylan. So that we can have a new generation of Qs, bring back Brooklyn. Now, that girl, the last girl is fine. Adrian Leone, I like
love her.
Her.
Love you know, her. Fan favorite.
Bring on Julie Pinson as Lois Cirillo and just have a ball game.
See, I don't even mind Olivia being in the house.
I don't want Olivia to go anywhere, but I think it would be a juicy story because those chicks grew up together in Bensonhurst. And I'm thinking, you know,
okay,
Lois Cirillo,
I could be there for
if
it.
Lois pops up, you know, their kids have history. Remember Lulu, Brooklyn tried to bust up Dante. That would give Lulu something real to do if Brooklyn comes back to town and she's in danger and she needs Dante's help. And then you bring back Lois Cirillo and that causes friction between Ned and Olivia. And then you have a solid Dylan,
one thing in here?
Yeah.
No.
Sky Chandler Quartermain.
I agree. Jillian, what were you going to say?
I wasn't going to say that, but yeah.
If the Quartermains are back, Sky needs to return.
Okay, sit on your
feet.
Or a sore-assed her daughter. Her little daughter, Lila, can be sore-assed.
No, she's not a real Quartermain. I mean, Sky, though, look.
She's a Chandler and a Quartermain. I don't care.
Sky finds out that she has a new brother, though. She should.
Sky could play the Tracy role with that.
Yes, Sky back as Tracy with her daughter, sore-assed. We could get a young versus little Emma.
You bring Sky back and say Tracy was lying. That she was lying and that Sky really is Alan's daughter. And then, yeah, she fucked Ned. Oh, well, they do it on God and Light. So you bring her back and you find out that she really is a Quartermain. And remember, Sky teamed up with AJ. Sky could come back and team up with Billy Miller's new character, Drew, to fight Ned for the company against Ned, you know, with Ned and Dylan on one side. Michael, because he's more like he's kin to Monica. So Michael, you know, Michael is Jason. Okay, so Michael is Drew's deputy. Dylan becomes Ned's deputy. You pit the two boys against each other with Serena Baldwin in the middle of both of them because ELQ wants to acquire Tob Technocorp or whatever, some division of Dominique Taube's fortune that Serena now has.
Telecommunications or something like that.
So yes, you have, you know, so you have Michael, both Michael and Dylan being dispatched to woo Serena Baldwin, much to Scotty's dismay. Both boys are trying to woo Serena because they want to get their hands on whatever hot property that she owns as part of her portfolio. Scotty trying to prevent both of these boys from getting at his. Well, no, let's say we'll say that Scotty likes Dylan. He would like Dylan, but he doesn't want Michael anywhere near Serena because he's a Corinthos and he hates Sonny. And you know, then you bring Brooklyn in to mess up Dante and Lulu. You just get rid of Valentina and Nina. I'm just gonna say it. Get rid of them. Get rid of them.
Well, yes. Speaking of that, that's what I had a question about. What is his role along with Andre's role in this whole Jason Patient 6 truth thing?
I don't know
thing,
what their roles are, but Andre, Valentine, Nell, Nina can all go. They can just all go. I love Michelle Stafford. She is one of the best to ever do it, but Nina is a dud. I have, you know, I've said, you know, I've been gingerly about it, like, pair her with Ned, pair her with someone on the canvas that's core and see if it can work. But if all they're going to do is have Valentine and Nina make goo-goo faces at each other, that just makes it really easy to want to fast forward them. Michelle Stafford is a rock star. She could go to Days and play Sarah Horton or Melissa Horton, or, you know, she could go to Bold and be a totally reinvigorated Kristen Forrester, or, you know, or Donna Logan. Ooh, could you see Michelle Stafford as Donna Logan? You know, I mean, no. But she's just a dud. I mean, she's not a dud, but the character of Nina is just a dud on this show. It's so unnecessary. I mean, we can all point to the characters that are not needed. Nina, Andre, Valentine. I kind of like Amy because she's fun and cute and doesn't take up too much space, and we need people in the hospital. I've come around to Matt Cohen.
They can get rid of Nina's brother while he's at it because his acting hasn't improved in all these years.
Know, but Maxie and him are sort of popular, so he's not on my first list, my kill list. But Nell, Andre, Nina, and Valentine should all go. I like Curtis. I like Vanessa Anton. They can stay because we need some black folks in the town. I even like Aunt Viv's sister.
No.
She's kind of got grown on me. She could run Ruby's. I mean, Kelly's. You know, I'm okay with her. But, you know, get rid of Nina, Valentine, Nell, and Andre. We don't need them cats. We don't need
what
none of them.
Andre? Rolling, I'm so confused as to what.
Well, you know, he was a spy too, and I'm just like, he's so blah. And you know, I got to go. Look, I got to be equal opportunity. We can't have nobody blah. Not even for diversity's sake. Curtis is a win. I like Curtis. Curtis needs better storylines,
dialogue too.
You know, I'm not okay with him just being existing to either work for Sonny or not work for Sonny. Work for Sonny or not work for Sonny. But he and Vanessa Anton have a great storyline going. I would even be cool with just Sean Blakemore coming back for an arc to mess them up, you know. But I would also make Vanessa Anton a Quartermain because it would be an easy thing to do.
Ooh, that would be good.
Her mama was Bradley Ward's secretary, and they did the Uchiku, and that Jordan is really one of the blacker mains, and, you know, then you put TJ.
Not to be confused with Eddie Main.
You put TJ in the mix with, you know, the new virile versions of Michael and Dylan.
Here's the thing that I have an issue, though, with. TJ and Brooklyn would be really hot together, and if they're related, that doesn't work.
Well, Brooklyn 40. She too old for that boy.
She's in the same age group as Lulu and Dante. And what's wrong with TJ getting a little bit of older woman love?
No,
TJ, say I'm
she's the same age as Lulu. He could tap that.
What you talking about?
Lulu and Brooklyn were incomparable storylines. Lulu and Brooklyn were in comparable storylines. There's none that we see May December romances all the time. Why not?
She has a love interest. Her name is Melissa. Alexis is the girl.
No. It is not Melissa.
What's her name?
Lulu. Molly.
Lulu versus Brooklyn for Dante is the money shot.
Well, the thing about that is what makes that interesting is the fact that last time that Brooklyn was back, she set both Maxie and Lulu on edge. And the fact that both of those two have been in pretty weak storylines recently, Brooklyn could be a very good catalyst for rebooting both of those characters. Because Maxie's love interest, while the pairing may be popular, her storyline treads water. And it feels like it's going nowhere. Lulu has been obsessed with her ovaries and eggs for decades, and it needs to stop.
Maxie needs to be Anna Wintour. Drew and Sam need to hire Maxie as the editor-in-chief of Crimson. Maxie is like, I will do it, but I want an ownership stake, and I want to change the name to Maximiliana. Change it to her full name and make her that bitch. I'm sorry. If Maxie has been a fashion assistant for 10 years, she has the worst career coach ever. Come on. She needs to be the editor-in-chief of the magazine. She needs flawless hair and makeup like the OG Kate Howard used to get, Megan Ward. You know, Maxie needs to be that bitch on that show. She needs to be Erica Kane on this show. She needs to be a full-blown fashion dynamo, bringing back Brenda Barrett to be on the cover of Maximiliana. That is Max's full name, right, Jillian? It's Maximiliana.
Mariah Maximiliana.
So yeah, she'll call it Maximiliana, or maybe she'll rename it Georgie. You know, that'll be the name of the fashion magazine. And then she'll bring back Brenda for the first cover, and then she'll bring back Erica Kane will be the next cover, and then everybody from the ABC Daytime universe that has been the like glamorous characters. Lisa Peluso.
I want Robin Strassel on no cover. Sorry.
Oh, that would be so much fun. That would be great. Dorian Lord on the cover of Georgie.
For her to talk it before it happened. You know, she's like the boy.
Yeah, she would tell everybody 3 months ahead on Twitter. But well, who else from One Life was glamorous? Who was glamorous on that show?
Well, I always found Taya, but I know
Taya was a lawyer, though.
She was a lawyer, which is why you couldn't. But that's not to say that Taya couldn't be her legal counsel.
You know, yeah, I mean.
And Taya has history in Port Charles, so.
We're excited about GH. Now, it does still have.
We're excited about a specific path on GH.
But they have, and you know, that's
because they got to quit with Michael Nell.
This can help reboot the quarter, and then you have that you give Sonny back. You got Sonny and Jason and their Rock'em Sock'em stuff. Now I'm gonna be honest. I'm being too honest today. These actors gonna send their people after me. I done said Joshua Morrow ain't that strong of an actor, and that Billy's a better.
He knows.
But I'm gonna be honest. Let me tell you, y'all all excited. We all are excited about Steve. I'm gonna be real. It's gonna be so hard for me when my Tamara Brown is on that screen and she's not Carly. I'm gonna be having hard times with that because Tamara Brown and Mo Bernard. I'm gonna tell y'all know how much I love Sonny and Brenda. But when Brenda came back in 2002. And she was all, hey, Sonny. I'm like, I love you, Brenda, but leave Sonny alone. Because he is.
You talking about in that flashback scene in the church?
Not a flashback, but no, when she came back, and that was when Roy DeLuca popped Sonny. Yes, but when Tamara Bronze, Carly, and Mo Bernard together were my everything. Boy, I love me some Sonny and Carly back then. I used to get on that SoapNet message board and fight day and night because they would be talking.
Chicken wings.
She had chicken wings and stuff, and I'd be like, shut up! Because, boy, I love me some.
We didn't meet on the SoapNet message boards, Jamie, but we were both on them at the same time.
She could roll her neck like a sister. I was like, I like you.
Oh, there is nobody in daytime who rolls a neck like Tamara Braun. No one.
You're lying.
There's one. Nina on The Young and the Restless.
It's going to be so hard to come back and not have her be Oh, especially with Steve Burton on the show too. That was my sweet spot in so many. That was like when fans really, old school fans, hated that era of the show. And I'm like, what's the problem? Because they were like, it's Maurice and Steve and Tamara every day. I'm like, I don't see a problem. So, you know.
So I have a question for you.
And I'm like, okay, well, we need Laura Wright.
Jamie, well, I have a question for you, because while this Quartermain wishful storytelling that we've all been contributing to has been wonderful, it's giving me chills, and I really, really wish that it was happen.
Get to the story.
I have a question.
Child Nina gonna be on 5 days next week.
Yeah, she will. But
yeah, we totally are wishing and hoping and dreaming
and praying.
But shit, that ain't gonna happen.
That's what the title of the podcast should be, is wishing and praying for things that aren't gonna happen. But would you, obviously it would be amazing if Vanessa Marcel returned and having Tamara Braun on screen the same time that Vanessa Marcel is on screen, but would you want them to follow up the storyline about her possibly being pregnant with Dante's kid?
No. You know, no. Luke, I'm going to be honest. Sonny and Brenda for me live on YouTube, because there has been so much damage to the Sonny and Brenda storyline over the years. You know, I don't even know Brenda's child's name. What's that child's name? Egbert? I don't know. They have a very complete arc for me on YouTube. Now, what I would be doing with Vanessa Marcel, especially if she does end up getting the gig at the talk, I would have her on both Y&R and Bold. I would create a very Brenda Barrett-esque character, because those shows are set in glamour. I would make her, I don't even know the history.
The supermodel?
I would make her the model that Bill dated, who he sired Liam with. I know Liam's mama is supposed to be dead, but this is a soap opera. When has that ever stopped anybody on daytime television?
Especially Bold.
You know, I would say that
Bold don't really
no,
do
Bold
that.
Is actually Bold is Bold. Hunter Tylow and Kimberlyn Brown are pretty much the only Bold don't really do a lot of returns from the dead.
Yeah,
they've done it very sparingly.
No, I wasn't talking about return from the deads. I was talking about the recasting.
But see,
okay,
that's why it wouldn't be that big of a deal for me on that show. If Liam's mother lied, and you know,
all I see, I'm not even thinking about B&B. I'm thinking about Vanessa Marcel versus Michelle Morgan on The Young and the Restless, and there is where I get excited.
You create this character for her that she gave up Liam because she really wanted to focus on her modeling career and her move, and then make her a movie.
Wait a minute!
Star.
Oh,
a minute.
I just had an idea.
No.
What about her and Nick Newman?
No. What are you saying, Jillian?
No, Vanessa Marcel and Nick Newman would just be beauty.
Okay, so, hold on. She can't be Liam's mother that gave him up. Didn't she raise Liam and then she dropped dead?
But that could be, maybe it was all a lie. Maybe Dollar Bill was messing with two models at the same agency. And maybe the one who really had him gave him to to the other chick and lied. You know, this is daytime. We can come up with something. Look. I just all you have to do to figure it out is watch The Tale of Three Jason Todds.
Or all you have to do is watch Sammy or Jason come back and get inspired.
I don't need Jillian Groat anymore with bad storytelling. So she's not Liam's mama, but she's the sister. She's the sister of Liam's mama.
No, forget that thing. Or she can just be Bill's first wife. When Bill first came to that show, they don't say it anymore, but Bill mentioned that he was married before. I want to say...
You know who she can be, and she can be both. So we can just create a backstory for her. You know how DeForest has always had Hispanic maids in the early years of the show?
No, why she got to be a maid? No, I'm done.
She can be the daughter of the Forrester maid, who grew up on the house with them and was in love with Thorne, Ingo, but Stephanie ran all the way.
Ingo and Vanessa Marcel reunited. Oh my God.
She ran away to La Ciudad, Mexico, and she became a telenovela starlet. and now she is like the biggest telenovela star in the world. And Dollar Bill hires her because they're going to launch a Spanish version of Ion Fashion. You know how to have people in
Espanol? Better, what if she has, because she is the TV star, make her a Sofia Vergara type who has these big licensing deals with both Forrester and either Newman or Jabot.
So you have, you bring
you
her
don't,
on.
You don't make her as like.
You introduce her on Bold. She has a past with Thorne, you know, and then you play that up. But then Chelsea 2.0 wants her to.
Oh my God! I hate
is it wrong that I would really love it if Thorne and her had a child and it was Liam? So Liam wasn't a
no. He's fucking Forrester girls. He screwed them all. He spermed all over the Forrester girls. It can't be no. He's married to Steffi. He can't be penetrating.
No.
Thorne's niece. This is not
Game of
Thrones.
Go back over there.
This
isn't Game of Thrones?
Yes. Boning his niece, cousin.
Go back over there and sit down.
No,
yeah.
But they can have a child because of the fact that we need to have, and the child can be that sexy boy who's rubbing oil all over Rena's sofa. That's Victor. That's Vanessa Marcel's son with Ingo Rademacher's Thorne. Her name was Inez. And Inez grew up on the Forrester place, you know, and her mother, Rosarita, was always running around having to just run at Stephanie's beck and call. And she grew up in the shadows, but then Thorne deflowered her one night. But they sent her away, and they sent her baby away. And now this boy, who Eric has no idea is in there rubbing his wife's booty, is his grandchild with Ingo Rademacher and Vanessa Marcel, soap superstars reunited. And then she goes to Genoa City, where she is the new face of All in One Room, Brash and Sassy. And then she can talk about it on the talk. And that, my children, is how you cross-promote.
Synergy. There you go.
On that note.
Roles did not get smaller. The TVs did. Or what was the saying? I don't know.
Stop. Go ahead, Luke.
Ready for my close-up, Luke.
On that note, I have a programming note. We will not be having a podcast next week because I am going to be traveling. I'm going to be in California.
This podcast is going to be monthly. Let's just go ahead and admit it.
And blame Luke for that.
Well, Luke, I don't actually have any travel plans
Luke
for the after this one.
And he likes to be bop about the coast during this time of the year. You see, it's his traveling season. He's going to a literary salon on Martha's Vineyard next week, and then he shall be on the Instagram in Albuquerque.
I don't actually have any more travel plans until the end until the new year. So once this is over, all we have to deal with is the holidays. But I did think it was interesting because since we are going to be gone on Geek Confidential, today we recorded a top five new TV shows of the season episode. And would you believe it? Dan went and is trying to dethrone me as the king of making it up as we go along because he was just pulling all kinds of stuff on there. So
well, I can't believe that. But hey, before we go, y'all, so a lot of the people in the web soap community are doing the damn thing. Y'all need to binge The Bay. This season of The Bay is produced with Gregory Martin and Wendy Rich. Y'all know we all love Wendy Rich. We've been begging and pleading and praying to soap Jesus for her to be back in the game.
Baby,
well,
back.
She is. Speaking of that song, Jillian, Ron Moss is the evil baddie John Blackwell who is trying to send his half-sister, Sarah Garrett, to jail. You know, that's Mary Beth Evans. And the judge in the case is Victoria Rowell, and she's trying to send Mary Beth Evans and Sarah Garrett to prison. But Mary Beth's hunky son, Christos, who is really named Peter. No, Christos is the actor's name. Peter Garrett is married to Karrueche Tran, who is also on Jillian's Beloved Clause. And
that's
they
right.
Got married so that he could get the trust fund that his mama set up for him and stuff so that he could get his mama out of jail because Jack Devereaux Matthew Ashford, I don't know his name on the show, he's evil, and he married Sarah Garrett to get her money, but he also is like a raper and stuff. And so Nicholas Costa, who was Lionel Lockridge, is her daddy, but he's also Ron Moss's daddy, and he's just a whoremonger because I think they all got different mamas. But he's the mayor of the town. He's married to Jackie Zeman on the show and stuff, but he's trying to save Sarah Garrett, who is Mary Beth Evans, but all these people are scheming and conniving to keep her in prison, like Brandon Beamer, because Brandon Beamer is Ron Moss's son. Everybody's on this show, child. Michael Mancini from Melrose Place is on there calling himself Arturo, and Arturo used to hunt Sarah Garrett back in the day. But in the past, let me tell y'all, Robert Scott Wilson was Arturo in the past. And Amelia Marshall, who played Julie Grant on God and Light, she was this African priestess midwife person who delivered Sarah Garrett's baby when she was on the island and presumed dead. This show is off the chain.
You've never made the bay sound so interesting. I'm gonna have to check it out.
Alicia Lee Willis is on there as Sarah Garrett's niece, but she is a dumb hoe.
Kung Fu Barbie still?
She is, and she has not aged. That girl looks good. And let me tell you, so her man on the show is on the down low, and she does not know that he has hunched this guy that her brother is trying to hunch. And her brother is on the down low, too. She don't know her brother is gay, her boyfriend is gay, and her friend is gay. I'm like, you have no gaydar. You are so silly. So it's all about Sarah Garrett's family, though. And get this. So Lily Melgar plays Janice Ramos. That's one of my favorite characters. She has this cosmetics company called Exotica. And the Exotica set is better than Brash and Sassy's. So take that. So she is in love with Christos Garrett. But this is the thing. Peter Garrett, she's in love with him, but she hates Sarah Garrett. So she hates his mama, but she screwed the woman's son, you know, kind of like Dorian and Vicky. But then they really did fall in love, but then somebody raped her and left her in the water and stuff. And so Christos married Carucci, but Ron Moss saved her from the water. And so I think they might be trying to go together, but she's still in love with Peter Garrett, Christos. But her cosmetics company is in danger. And Brittany Underwood is her secretary. And it's like, we need to have a big name as our new face for Exotica. And she's like, who can I get to be the face of Exotica? And it turns out she has to go to Carucci Tran, whose character, I can't remember her name right now. But that's the wife of the man she really loved. And she got to go hat in hand. Well, really, she had this.
Carucci's name is Vivian. Carucci's name is Vivian.
She's like, Vivian, I want you to be the new face of Exotica. And, you know, Vivian is giving her face like, why are you over here and stuff? You know you is dirty, Janice, and everything. And I'm trying to get my man and me to be happy in our little house and stuff. And you is nasty. Why? But I need you to be the face of Exotica. So the bay got it going on. Y'all need to watch.
Wait
the
a minute. So hold up. So is old girl dating a brother? You keep saying down low. So I'm like,
no. They're white boys on the down low. White boys can be on the down low too, child. You ain't been in a steam room at LA Fitness.
What happened?
All of them are white and on the down low. Down low. Down low. Keep it on the down low. And everybody from your favorite soaps from the past are on there. Tristan Rogers is Mary Beth Evans' love interest, but it looks like she's going to be in a triangle with Arturo, played by Michael Mancini from Melrose Place. And also, Chad Duhl is on there. Now, this is a stretch. Chad Duhl and Christos are twin brothers. And I'm like,
nope.
Okay.
Jamie, do you realize that I literally just tweeted about how you were making me want to tune in to the latest season of The Bay, and then you said that?
Chad is evil. Actually, if Michael Luke, when you watch The Bay and you see how, like, menacing Chad Duhl is, In fact, I should be, yeah. So if Chad Duhl was written like Gregory Martin and Wendy Rich wrote him on GH, I wouldn't want him recast. Because he's like evil and he hates Sarah Garrett for like leaving him on the island, I guess, with the black people. I don't know what the black people was doing on the island. I don't know where this island was, but it had a big swarthy black man. And then I'm watching it. I'm like, is that Amelia Marshall? And Michelle Valjean tweeted me and was like, yeah. So Michelle Valjean was the creative consultant for this season. Karen Harris wrote for it. Ann Schulte wrote for it. So Gregory, like, put in work. So, yes, you must watch The Bay. You must also binge me and Victoria Ryle's show, The Rich and the Ruthless, which has gotten picked up for season two by Urban Movie Channel. There's going to be... Shut up, Jillian.
So, wait, what did she say?
I said no.
So also, Ladies of the Lake is coming back for another season. There's Tainted Dreams from Sonia Blangiardo. Venice is on season 72. Will the lesbian
Wait, it's zone? Still going?
Yes, it is, child.
Seriously?
So, yes, it is.
Boy, talking about milking a concept.
Stop that. Support the web series world.
No, like, I'm totally shocked. This is not me. This is not me throwing shade. Like, I'm completely dumbfounded right now.
And then you
let that rock. That was funny as shit.
Oh, I'm leaving it in.
If you are missing, like,
yes, I follow the Eastsiders guys on Instagram.
What is that show that we liked on HBO with all the
looking?
The boys in San Francisco. Yeah, if looking. You're missing Looking, you need to tune into Eastsiders. Now, that show is top-notch. It's really well done. Van Hanses is in it. The creator is
with us? Okay.
Stop that. Y'all are just being so catty. I'm the southerner on here. Yeah, Eastsiders.
You've taught me well, Jamie.
Hey, I like that. High five.
So we have, you know, we've been slacking on our Mackin' with the web series community, but there are a ton of really juicy little shows out there. So The Bay.
And Eastsiders is on Netflix, which is going to make it easy for me to watch.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
Did not know that. But, well, yeah. Well,
I just subscribed to them, literally, as you're talking on Twitter, and it says now on Netflix.
They're distributed by Wolf, which is like a major LGBT distribution company. So yeah, they went from, you know, little web series that could to legit. You know, The Bay has also made like international deals, and they filmed, I think, in, y'all know I don't know my geography.
Yeah.
Amsterdam, maybe Sweden.
Leave it alone. Leave it alone.
We better be careful. Cause...
Somewhere over the seas they filmed, you know.
They probably filmed it right in Nutbush, Tennessee. And
no, they filmed it overseas. They had to get green cards. Not green cards. What you got to get to go overseas? Passports.
The passports.
Jamie, I fear for the day that you actually go overseas.
Don't call him. Don't call us.
Mm-mm. I'm going to... All you got to do is watch
Especially that. Since he doesn't know he can't pay for his own bail.
Let me tell you, if you want to get a sense of how I'll be traveling overseas, watch the episode of Designing Women where Suzanne is yelling at the man, excuse me! Excuse me! How do you say move in Japanese? And he's like, I speak English. Oh, that'll be me. I will be an international incident, more than likely.
Like Suzanne Sugarbaker.
She is my spirit animal.
And on that note, now I have two really good titles. The one earlier, or Suzanne Sugarbaker is my spirit animal. Either of those are excellent. I'll have to decide. On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at DaytimeConfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, Twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find Jillian on Twitter at Jillian Bow. Jamie is at... Nope. Jamie is at Jamie_Kerr, and I'm at Luke. That is not the case. Jamie... Jamie, this podcast is ending on a high note. Jamie's at Jamie_Giddens, and I'm at Luke_Kerr. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye.